Hey, Not Couple Goals fans, it's Tyler McCarthy here with a special announcement about our podcast before we get into this week's episode. Beginning on April 28th, 2024, all the great shows you know on the Pop Break Today podcast feed, including this one, are getting a new home. That's going to be a podcast known as just The Pop Break, not Pop Break Today, just The Pop Break. The reason we're doing that is because we're merging with Pop Break TV, another great podcast feed from the Pop Break network. So now it's all going to live in one place, including us. So if you don't already subscribe to Pop Break TV, which is going to become The Pop Break, go on over, subscribe to Pop Break TV, or if you're listening to this in the future, just go over and subscribe to The Pop Break, and that's where you're going to find future episodes of Not Couple Goals, along with a bunch of other cool stuff, including Anime Pop, Saturday Morning Adventures, Roses and Rejections, along with everything you know and love on the Pop Break Today feed. So, again, April 28th, go subscribe to that feed, and that's where you're going to find all future episodes of Not Couple Goals. Now, let's get into our regular show. Hello and welcome to Not Couple Goals, the podcast where we talk about the best and, let's face it, worst in romantic thriller cinema. I'm your co-host, Tyler McCarthy, here with my other co-host,
Allie Nelson. That's right. Don't adjust your dials for people that still have dials. It's not Kathleen Turner, the queen of romantic thrillers. It is Allie Nelson, your Not Couple Goals co-host. But I have lost my voice this week due to extreme allergies and attack of a tree that's by our window. So we are actually going to have a special guest who's going to help with the hosting duties. She's a three-time return guest, actually.
That's right.
So I'm teasing that for you. But this week, we subjected our guest to the 1989 romantic thriller Twisted Obsession, also known as El Sueño del Mono Loco, which I think translates to The Dream of the Crazy Monkey, which, honestly, almost a better title for this movie.
Makes it just as much sense.
It stars Jeff Goldblum, Miranda Richardson, Anne Monet. I think it's a French or French actress, and Daniel Sicaldi. But mainly the first two, I think, is the people that you're going to know.
Yeah.
It was directed by Fernando Trueba. It was written by Manolo Maggi, Mano Meias, and Fernando Trueba. And it was based on the novel by Christopher Frank, which I think is Mad Monkey.
And she can pronounce all those names perfectly, but it's her voice bothering her, and that's why it sounded weird. So look, if you haven't seen the 1989 movie Twisted Obsession, pause this podcast, go watch it, and then come on back. If you've done that, I'm sorry. Let's get into it. Okay. As Allie mentioned, or teased in the intro to this podcast, we have a record breaker at Not Couple Goals, actually. The third, a guest returning for a third time. You may remember her from, Killing Me Softly. You may remember her and her significant other in our episode, our Halloween episode this year from The Fly. You may also know her as the co-host of the Socially Distanced podcast, the Anime Podcast, Anime Pop podcast. I may be getting that wrong. And a bunch of other great stuff. And she's also the Human Star Wars Encyclopedia. It's Amanda Rivas again. Hi, Amanda. Welcome back.
Hi. Thank you guys for having me. I didn't realize I broke a record. I'm so excited. First, y'all are one of my favorite podcasts to listen to. And I love you guys so much.
Thank you.
We love you too.
See? Jinx. Truly, we do love you. I for the listener, Allie had like no voice 2 days ago. I sent a message to Amanda saying I might need some help on this one, and she responded and was down within minutes. So we thank you very much. You're a big friend of our podcast, and we love it.
Anytime, I'm always happy to help. I mean, you guys are wonderful, and Tyler, you're helping us out with our socially distanced.
Oh, you're right.
Too, so thank you for that.
Yeah, there's a little teaser for you. Although I guess if you're listening to Oh, no, it's for tomorrow. So, yeah, if you're listening to this the day it comes out, maybe tune into Socially Distanced this week, because you may hear from me about what promises to be a terrific movie.
And terrific is sarcastic.
Well, we'll see. I haven't seen it yet, so I'm reserving my judgment.
You have the record for interesting Marvel projects.
That's true. That's true. Secret Invasion, Moon Knight, others. Yeah.
Hey everyone, I'm Michelle.
And I'm DJ.
And we host Roses and Rejections, a podcast that talks about all things Bachelor Nation and reality TV. Each week, we'll give you our insights into the delicious mess that is the Bachelor franchise.
We also cover other reality shows and give you our hot takes on the good, bad, and all the in-between.
Catch us every Wednesday during the Bachelor seasons.
Or every other Wednesday while the Bachelor isn't airing.
In the Pop Break TV feed, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, this is Josh.
And this is Aaron.
And we're the host of the Anniversary Brothers podcast.
The podcast where we talk about the anniversaries of your favorite TV shows and movies.
Hey Aaron, what do Muppet Treasure Island, Arrow, and the Birds have in common?
They all feature bird puppets?
Close. They're all movies and shows we've covered on the pod.
Find our film podcast on the Pop Break Today feed.
And find our TV podcast on the Pop Break TV feed. Thanks. Bye.
Okay, but Before we get too deep into it, now, if you want to, normally we ask our guests what their relationship to romantic thrillers is, but this, for anyone who hasn't been familiar with you, Amanda, I want to talk about the reason we picked this movie, which was your interest in its lead star. This is what happens when my wife is sick and I have sole control over the movie that we do. I was like, Amanda loves this actor. I wonder if he's ever been in a romantic thriller. A quick Google search spits this movie out, and here we are. So Amanda, I want to ask, like, what is your recap for our listeners, your Jeff Goldblum obsession, and was it at all tarnished by watching this movie?
Well, the funny thing is, I actually saw this movie when I was like 17. That's
no
the funniest
way.
Part. I did. So I went on a Jeff Goldblum. So for those who don't know, Jeff Goldblum is like the first crush I've ever had in my life. Like, first love of my life. Then it was Brandon Lee. Then it was Sting. Like, it just kind of started the trend. Yes. Brandon Lee is my other love of my life.
Those my are, wife just clutched her heart at the mere mention of Brandon
Lee. That's why The Crow and Jurassic Park are my two favorite movies of all time, because those are my two men. Right.
Fantastic.
There.
I had an Italian, it was called like El Corvo, Brandon Lee Crow poster in college on my wall.
Oh man, that's so awesome. And I mean, you know, I give those two credit, because that's my taste in men, and that's why I have my short king here at home, because he reminds me so much of both, even though he still gets mad that he's like, what do you mean I remind you of Jeff Goldblum? I was like, well, you have a unique personality. And so I was like 8 when I saw Jurassic Park for the first time, and just here comes Ian Malcolm coming out. And fun fact, my son is named after Jeff Goldblum's characters in the movies. So Malcolm is a middle name. I really wanted first name, but that didn't happen. So, but still got my way. But saw Jeff Goldblum and was like, who is this like tall vision in black? Just like, I think I hit puberty at that point. It was just like a beautiful moment of just this curly hair. And like, I mean, we all know. And I'm like, you know what? I do fine in math. I do great. But I just really, I would take a math class if you were my professor at UT Austin. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah.
For sure. And yeah, I went on this binge of starting to watch as much Jeff Goldblum movies as I can. Second movie I saw was The Fly. And then I just kind of went on this watch. So when I was 16, 17, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to watch everything that he's been in. And that's what I did. I tracked down some of the most obscure movies, because I'm like, you know what? I have a crush on him. You know, the more visuals, the better. You know, I mean, yeah. I need more Jeff Goldblum to the eyes. And I did watch this movie, but it was so not great that I blocked it from my memory, because I didn't really remember too much of it at all, except the outfit that Jeff Goldblum wears with the sweater jacket combo.
Oh yeah,
that's why I remembered that I saw this film, because I was like, oh, and the glasses.
What
the
a nice outfit.
And I was like, oh, I remember him wearing this. Yes. So
do you remember most Jeff Goldblum roles by the wardrobe that he's wearing or not wearing?
Yes, wardrobe, because he always has the most interesting fashion choices. And even when I met him 2016, No, it was after Heads Up. So 2018, and you guys have heard the story of how I just like froze up. And just, but I mean, he was so stylish with like fedora and like the leather jacket. I was like, oh, there's the Ian Malcolm, and just super suave. He's a big flirt. I mean, Allie, you still have the best story, I feel like. And it's one of the most epic stories. I told my best friend this story, your story, and she's like, oh my God, that's so great.
Well, I feel like he didn't flirt with me though. He seemed like, I think I mildly annoyed him. And he was actually dressed very normal. I remember him being in like a white sweater. Because wow. I would not have guessed if I had not gotten face to face with him and then like looked him in the face and realized like, oh my God, I'm looking at Ian Malcolm, that I would not have guessed like, oh, that's Jeff Goldblum. But then I was like crossing over him to get it to my seat at The Boy from Oz and realized it mid crossover and was like, no, oh shit. And then kicked him in the shin, which was not great.
So amazing. Oh, she died. She was like, that's the best story ever. And with her, she also loves Jeff Goldblum. So like both of us, in fact, we just got tickets to go see him in October with the Mildred Seltzer Orchestra. They're coming here to San Antonio. Ooh. So both of us are going to that. And so I wound up taking two pictures with him that day at the Comic-Con because she could not be here. She was in Louisiana at the time. So she was like, here's his picture, print it out for me and have him hold it. And that's what she did. He did. He held up the first picture. So it's like, she's there.
He seems like he'd be like amenable to that too. Like he would find that delightful.
He got a kick out of it. He started laughing. He was like, you guys are such great, good friends. Cause even the picture she chose, she's doing a kissy face. It is hilarious. I will have to send it to you guys. And
please
so
do.
That's how much we love him. I probably, you know, I was on a different podcast and I talked about how I was virtually married to Sting, who's my favorite wrestler, like with this crazy Angel Fire website from like back in high school. I'm pretty sure I virtually married Jeff Goldblum as well. So I have a lot of virtual husbands.
Amazing.
From high school. So that's my man.
Has watching this movie as an adult in 2024, has that tarnished your love of Jeff Goldblum in the slightest?
I was like, I'm hoping he was just looking for maybe he thought it was a good idea. I don't know. I mean, I still love him. I just was like, why did you make this though? I'm like, I had to kind of look at, this was after The Fly. I was like, his career really didn't really take off, I think, again, until Jurassic Park happened.
Yeah.
So he made a lot of like meh movies around that time. I think the only other movie I enjoyed was Earth Girls Are Easy. But I want to say that was before.
I think that is before. This one seems to be the most meh of the movies.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't, this one was like, ooh.
It doesn't help that, like you mentioned, this is after The Fly. It's just a couple years before Jurassic Park. Yeah. Yet somehow this looks like the first movie ever put on film. It is so like weird.
Well, I have to imagine that the version on Freevee, I'll go to bat for this movie just for this. Like, I have to imagine that this is not the quality that it originally was in.
That's true.
I feel like it was a lost movie or something somehow, and they found like a bootleg copy on VHS that somebody had like taped off of TV or something, and then that got uploaded to Amazon Freevee. Because like the version we watched, there's no way that anyone would have intended to cut off people's heads.
Yeah.
In that many, it was like zoomed in sort of weirdly, like the
such extreme close ups.
It seemed like when you make a copy of a copy, like using a Xerox machine, like it just, there's no way. And like, even just like the screen cap that's used for Freevee is such a better quality than the actual scene that screen cap is from, that I was like, something went wild.
I was going to say, I have a third birthday party, like home movie that looks better than this movie.
Yeah.
It's the one where bootleg Barney the Dinosaur came.
Yes.
I don't know if I've ever told Barney that story.
No,
my lovely parents were trying to do a nice thing for me, and they hired a Barney the Dinosaur to come to my birthday, but it had like sharp teeth, and it was like the wrong shade of purple. It was like bootleg. So there is a home movie of me back in Connecticut where this thing walks through the door. I scream, little Tyler freaks out and runs. And then I kind of like come back because I'm like, hey family, why is no one running? A goddamn monster just walked in the room. It's me, like, it's me running and then coming back to, like, rescue my family, being like, you don't understand, that thing is going to kill you, it is not of this earth.
Well, I feel like, I think for, and I'm older than you guys, so I feel like, but I always feel like there's always one terrible birthday party story like that. Like, my parents wound up hiring a clown for one of my birthdays, and he showed up drunk. I was like four. And I'm looking at the pictures, I'm like, he looks wasted, like his paint's all running and everything. And my dad was like, yeah, he was, he's like, his table was like a Corona table that he was like putting stuff on. And I'm like, wow, guys, y'all are very, very, very Hispanic. And everyone's there with their beers and the pictures and everything. I was like, I'll just let this drunk clown like show up.
I hope he's not a sad drunk too. Like, yeah, it's so much worse.
He did look like a sad drunk clown. Like, it was like the, he had like the white face paint with the red and the, it's all faded and it's running. I'll just send y'all the picture later. It's hilarious. I'm like, Tyler, if you ever upload that, that Barney, please
yeah,
send that.
I have to, every time I go back home to Connecticut, I'm like, I have to find that VHS because it's bad. Even my parents to this day are like, oh, I mean we thought we were doing a nice thing, but that Barney looked bad. But anyway, okay, back to this movie. So Amanda, you gave us your experience with it. You were 27, or not, you were 27, you were 17, just wanted to watch everything Goldblum was in. Allie, how about you? Had you heard of this movie at all?
No, I mean, it's rare that I have not heard of even an obscure sort of erotic thriller, romantic thriller. I will say it was not on the extensive list that I have created because I, as bad as some of our movies get, I have vetted the list. there are some standards in this podcast. And so, yeah, as Tyler mentioned, he went rogue with this one. He did not do the movie I suggested he choose. He went rogue, went off the list. And, so, yeah, this is what you end up with when you do not go through my vetted list.
I did. I thought, I'll accommodate our gracious guest host. I'll do something nice for Amanda. And I did. Amanda, do you remember I texted you 37 minutes into this movie and was like, I feel like I owe you an apology.
I was like, no, I mean, this, sometimes it's just fun to go like off the rails and go down this rabbit hole. And you're like, this is a life changing experience.
So, I mean, so this was, honestly, this movie was unexpected in multiple ways. I was excited because I, too, do, I, well, my love is not as extensive as Amanda's. I do love Jeff Goldblum. I think we all have, like, a love of, like, you know, like a Christopher Walken-esque love of him. I do think he's an attractive man because, you know, I have eyes. and, like, I was, like, looking forward to seeing him use that charm that he has, that like very specific, like strange genius, like Robert Downey Jr.-esque charm, and like have him like circa The Fly romancing ladies. And this movie did not, I thought it was going to be sexier or just sexy in general. I feel like this movie did not provide what I thought. It went strange and also upsetting places.
Yeah, the sex scenes in this movie, every single one of them are deeply upsetting. They're everyone is either at best vacant, at worst like clearly not enjoying themselves. It's bad. Like there's no, well, I mean, I'll speak from the hetero male perspective. Not a boner to be had in this movie. What do you guys think?
I like to say this is the land where eroticism went to die.
Yeah, I didn't even notice, like, because there were times where I sort of phased in and out because I was like, I don't know if I'm going to even have to talk about this movie. And I would got, you know, I not to get too far into, I was getting bored at points and was like, I don't know, like there would just be abrupt shifts from one scene to the next. Like it was almost like mid sentence where he'd be like, hey, do you want to go to the car? And then it would just be like a new scene and you'd be like, I don't know. And so like when sex scenes would happen, I wouldn't even realize it was a sex. It was also like really dim at times. So I'd be like, oh, that's a sex scene, which is not how you should feel when a sex scene. You should be like, oh yeah, that's a sex scene. Not like, that's a sex scene, question mark.
He had more affection in his eyes for the T-Rex in Jurassic Park.
Yes. Yes. I feel this. He felt very robotic in this. I'm like, it's Jeff Goldblum. Like, he should be like the king of suave. I would like, normally I'm like, hey, I'm ready. Obviously this is before my Short King. I'm going to disclaimer that.
Yes.
But I'd be like, I'm ready to throw down. Let's go. It's Jeff Goldblum.
It could be your hall pass.
Yeah, he's my hall. Pretty much he is my hall pass. So I'm like, yeah, I'm ready to go. And this one, I was like, damn, I never thought I would say that about Jeff Goldblum ever.
Well, because the first, like, he has a couple, like, sex scenes, but it's mostly just implied sex. Like, he kisses his ex-wife, and then, like, literally it's a hard cut to her leaving and him in bed shirtless. The one time something, like, sexual happens on screen, one, it's just upsetting because neither of them seem like they want to be doing it. It's when the sister of the director that he's working with kind of, like, goes to give him a blowjob. No nice way to put it. And it's truly, like, you watch him and them, like, awkwardly work on getting his pants down for, like, a good 3 minutes. It makes no sense. Wait, but we're getting ahead of ourselves. I've forgotten the format of our own podcast. One of us needs to give a brief recap of what this movie is about. Amanda, you are our guest. A better friend and co-host would have prepared you for this, but I think it'll be really funny to just on the fly get you to give us your recap of what this movie is about.
Was that pun intended?
A little bit.
So my recap of this is basically Jeff Goldblum plays a writer, and he is asked to, and it looks, sounds like he writes like scripts and screenplays.
Yes.
At least from what I got from the film. And he's in France and apparently is going through, his wife just decides to up and leave. You don't really know why, but he is basically taking care of their little boy and trying to kind of juggle that, trying to write, trying to kind of figure out what's going on. Then he gets called by his boss and is like, hey, I want you to take on this script. But it's one line on a piece of paper and it's a weird line. There's no context, nothing to it. So obviously Jeff Goldblum's like, hey, I question this. Like, what is this? And I hope it's not like an English director or something like that. And I hate those guys. And turns out the director is in the office.
Yes.
No warning, no mention of anything. And he's an English director and everything that Jeff Goldblum says he hates. But apparently has chosen Jeff Goldblum to write his project because he read an old book that Jeff Goldblum's character wrote a while back. And Jeff Goldblum decides to take the project, starts kind of creepily getting feelings for the director's sister. It just goes, you know, he works with the director to write this movie, but it's like, you don't really know what it's about. You never find out what actually happens in the film, I feel like, or whatever they wrote. But his life just starts kind of like, he gets fixated on the sister. Are we allowed to spoil? Can I go all the way through?
Oh yeah, all the way. Go nuts.
All the way through. Okay. Okay. Fixates on the sister. The sister is kind of acting shady. You don't know what her part is.
That's so generous. Acting shady. That's like generous for what the sister's doing.
I know. But she also feels like she was like pushed into it. Yeah. I could never quite get that either. So I'm like, I'm going to kind of leave that open for interpretation. Because sometimes I feel like she's wanting to. And other times it's just like, I have to do it because this is how my brother gets work.
Yeah.
Kind of thing, I guess. Then she disappears she disappears. Director's like, I can't find her. She's gone for like 3 or 4 days. And turns out that she was killed, or at least it seems that way, like murdered by Jeff Goldblum's boss. It went haywire. She drowns or something like that. I couldn't quite figure out. I was also kind of sleepy when I watched that part, but she dies basically after Jeff Goldblum goes on this search for her and finds her body. Like they go to this weird place where all the bodies are in the water. Like there's a bunch of like they're dredging bodies where I think the unknowns are like the kind of the people that are badly off go. Like if you want people to disappear, you put them in that area.
Was it for the medical school? Like I felt like that was like they were saying like the unclaimed bodies go to the med school.
Yeah. Wait, I guess maybe, like autopsies or something, right?
You may
or,
be
like,
conflating something I said to you, Allie, which is that the sad truth in America is that a lot of unclaimed or unhoused people or things like that, that our bodies wind up at a medical school. But I think here it was like It was something similar.
I think you said that because you were like, well, that's actually true.
Oh.
You said that phrase. So,
but it also seemed like they were selling tickets to, like, just gross people to come and, like, hang out with the bodies.
Pretty much. It was a shady spot. That's all I know that they
wound people were making out. Yeah, like, it was weird.
It was weird. And so then he finds the body and he just starts. And it's the weirdest scream in the world, you guys.
Yes.
It was the weirdest scream where he's like, and I'm just like, where's the connection? Like, there was no real connection between them. And he's apparently distraught, but you can tell in the way he screams, it's not that distraught.
It goes on for so long. Yeah. It's like almost that scene in Austin Powers where, like, the guy's like, no, because it's like, they just keep going back to him. And it's like,
it reminded me of that another comedy. It reminded me of that scene from Ace Ventura where he's proving that the window is soundproof because they keep cutting back to her dead perspective in the water and then him screaming. So, like, the sound is like,
so weird.
It was so odd.
So accurate. And then at some point he loses custody of his kid. The mom decides, or ex-wife's like, hey, I'm going to come back and get my kid. And she comes and gets him. And
because the kid isn't down. I remember the kid asked
the kid, the kid wanted to leave. And so loses custody of his kid. And then somehow, like, he winds up. So that in the course of all of this, he has his agent too, that apparently you're like, they mix business with personal, but then it turns out that she was, like, involved. It was kind of like a work that they were doing because she knew the director and the sister, but then she was, like, jealous that Jeff Goldblum loved the sister.
Yep.
And then they wind up together in a weird way. So that's kind of how it ends.
And for the listener who may be listening thinking, like, that sounds like a pretty disjointed recap. She sounds like she was unprepared for that. Two things. One, she was, because I'm mean and I just sprung that on her. Two, that was an incredibly accurate series of events of what this movie portrays on screen. It is mind-bogglingly nonsensical.
It was more coherent than the movie.
Yes. Amanda, bravo. Thank you.
I tried.
It was mean of me to make you do the recap, but I think it was worth it.
I think it's burned in my brain. At this point, you know, just the scream was like that, and I'm like, there are no words, guys, for this scream.
No,
it is hilarious. And Jeff Goldblum's face when he's making the scream is,
it's true. It's almost like he's, like, removed. It's like, I'm trying to think of, like, an example of, but, like, when an actor's clearly not into the role that they're playing, so they're kind of detaching themselves from it, like they're in on the joke. It felt like by the time he got to that, he was trying to be like, oh no, we're making an absurd dark comedy, and no.
Or like he thought they were just marking it for, like, they weren't gonna roll on this take. He was like, oh, I'll just mark it, okay, and then, like, I'll do the real one for the real take, and they were like, no, we got it, and he was like, wait, you filmed that?
He must have done this movie. There's very limited trivia for this movie when we get into that section, but one of the facts is that they filmed it in Spain and Paris. And I got to imagine he was just like, I'll live in Spain and Paris for a couple months. Why not? To do this movie that no one is going to see because it's being shot on a handheld VHS camera that the director's dad has.
I mean, and to be fair, I mean, there's some really great indie Spanish films that have come out. I mean, you have directors like Pedro Almodovar that does that great work. And then you have, so maybe he thought, oh, it's going to be something great like that. Great indie film. And then,
I mean, it does seem like it was a hit in Spain, didn't
That's
it win
true.
Like 6 Spanish Oscars or something?
Yes. Best Picture, Best Director. We'll get into all of that. But yeah, so it was, this movie
was it,
does
was
have
it the only movie eligible for those Spanish Oscars?
I think it was this and just a photo of the Spanish president giving the finger. Those were the options that year. It really is. There was also, I mean, we're in the general thoughts segment of the podcast, so we're just going to be bouncing all over the place. But I do remember when the movie started, you get this scene of Jeff Goldblum and the kid is in the back seat of the car and he's standing up and they're talking. And it's supposed to be of, like, these are the good times. This is, Jeff Goldblum's character is clearly upset that his wife has left him and, you know, he's taking care of the kid and everything, but he loves his kid and these are the good times. And he's like, oh, what, do you have a cough, sweetheart? He's like being a good dad. I did not buy him as like a father figure for a second. There was something so off-putting about him interacting with this child. This child who, you know, is, unless his mother is a literal marshmallow, is in no way Jeff Goldblum's son. But... But there was just no like chemistry with him as a father, and that went on throughout. Anytime we're supposed to buy him as a dad, there was just something that I feel like, I don't know if it's Jeff Goldblum or what, but like him as a dad figure didn't work for me.
Yeah, the way he picked up his kid to put him in the car when he picked him up from school, I was like, that is not even close like to what a dad does. Like, you know, I mean, even like, I mean, obviously Seth's bigger now, but when, you know, Brandon can still pick him up, but sometimes, you know, like there's a different way like dads and stepdads like play with their kids. Like they bounce them around. I mean, obviously they're a lot less, sometimes a lot less cautious than moms are, but you know, that's what they do. Like they bounce them around, they have fun, you know, they kind of like, you know, you horse around a little bit or you have piggyback rides or something. This was so weird. It was like, he just scooped him up and not even like a full scoop. He just was, the kid was awkward looking when he was just being carried to the car. Like, it's kind of like that. Ew, this isn't my kid.
Well, it's also When he picked the kid up to bring him, when the kid was sleeping and he picks him up to put him in his bed, he's shirtless, which was also like mistake number one.
In underwear.
Yeah. And he does it like he's auditioning to be on the cover of a romance novel, the way that he picks up this child. It's so uncomfortable. Yes. And so weird. And like, why are you emoting the way that you are with this? It's like, I don't think he had any, I don't even know. I think Jeff Goldblum may have had kids at like an older age. So I think he didn't know how to like communicate the longing for his child's love, like properly, like emote that versus like the way you do romantic emoting. So it's like, he just kept looking like he was like longing for this child's love in this like creepy romance novel as like cover of a romance novel type way that just started to make me more and more uncomfortable as the movie went on.
Yes. Especially too, because there were so many scenes. First of all, this movie takes place exclusively in close up. So I couldn't get a sense of their space, of their apartment or anything like that. But it did seem like they had one bedroom with two beds in it. And it was just sort of a coin toss which bed they would both sleep in, but it was never separate. And yeah, you're right. That scene, the kid is sound asleep. He's fine. And Jeff Goldblum picks him up out of his bed and brings him to his bed. And yeah, he's like shirtless and it's weird and uncomfortable. And the movie and I am not implying that there was any like romantic relationship between him and his son. It's not like that. But just visually watching that scene, there was just something not right about it. And there was another moment in the movie too, where he's shirtless and it's a bad move too. It's when the sister that he's obsessed with comes over and they have a really weird conversation that I'm sure we'll get into, but he starts to perform oral sex on her. Yes. And the little kid walks in and like, you know, look, kids walk in on parents or adults having sex. It happens. Jeff Goldblum locks eyes with the kid. And then the movie, the director decided the very next shot, we should do a hard cut to Jeff Goldblum shirtless in bed with his son. And the son is giving him the cold shoulder. What? It was so weird and uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It's lock eyes during a sexual moment. Now we're in bed and I'm shirtless. And it's like, again, I don't think they're implying like molestation or anything like that. But the visual language at play here is not good.
It's just like people who don't know or have never been in that situation.
Yeah.
That are trying to visualize what that situation would be like. Because if you've had somebody walk in on you, it's a whole, like, you try to cover up.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, hey, I'm here just trying. Somebody got a boo-boo, but don't do the same thing. Like, you make an excuse. And
my
you know,
mom just broke my dad's nose to sell the lie that they were just wrestling. I walked in and she just pops him one. That's a joke.
Oh, it's like, damn, that's amazing.
my parents, this will be the one episode my parents listen to, and they're like, that never happened.
Your mom secretly listens. She told you that.
She does. But yeah.
The movie's also literal language they use with the son is also stupid, honestly. Like, when his wife tells him, or ex-wife tells him, he's going to come live with me, he asked me a few weeks ago. So it's like implied that even before the kid walked in on the sexy time, that he had he'd been like, listen, dad's not about it. Like, I'm not happy here. I got to leave. And instead of him being devastated or, I don't know, giving the weird yell he gives at the end, he just like, he kind of like looks at the kid for a second and then goes, hey, but what about baseball practice? And he says it like in such a casual way. And that's the reaction. It's not like, oh, buddy, I'm so sorry. Or like, you know, why didn't you talk to me? He's like, hey, but what about baseball practice? And then it cuts to another scene. And it's like, that's his reaction.
Everything with the son felt like they wrote a script that was like a sexy romantic thriller and then got a studio note of like, we should add a kid. And then they just put a bunch of placeholder scenes and then didn't bother to flesh them out. The son just doesn't fit into the movie.
No. And the kid clearly was like, I think they just kind of let him do his thing. Like, he's just playing. And I in that way, it kind of, at least the kid worked, because that's how kids are. Like, they at that age, they're kind of in their own worlds. Like, you know, from my personal experience, my son was like, oh, okay, like, this life change is happening. And he was a little younger than he is now. I mean, it was like 2 years ago, but it's kind of the same reaction where it's like, okay, like, yeah, that's like, they don't register it. So, I mean, like, I think the kid just basically just showing up and being probably like, say this line or something like that, but kind of just being left to their own devices. I felt like he was the most natural part of this movie.
Yes.
Very real experience. Like, I was like, I get this, because again, I've lived through that kind of part of my life. And I'm like, you know, and like, the mom's relationship with him was weird too. Like, what mom would just take off on their kid?
Yeah. And she like comes back once in a while, like randomly hooks up with dad, doesn't stay the night.
Yeah.
I guess maybe it's very French. I don't know.
That's what
maybe.
I do. It feels bad. And it's probably a very American thing to say, but you do tend to grade these movies on a curve when it comes to the weird, like, bed sleeping situation and stuff like that. The second you hear that it's a, like, European movie or it's a French movie or something like that. But I wrote in my notes several times, like, this is weird and not in a French way. Like, even French people ought to find this strange. And yeah, there's so much of that. The fact that, the object of his obsession is 16 years old. Like, we do have to talk about that he's like, there's some underageness going on. Yeah.
Like, I didn't know that until Miranda Richardson screamed out, like, because I'm 30 and she's 16.
Yeah. I didn't either.
And Jeff Goldblum says at one point, like, when he's dressing down Miranda Richardson and he's saying, like, you know, you planned all this, you did this, and part of your plan was you knew that there were two guys who liked little girls, and it's like, ooh.
You're describing yourself as a guy who likes little girls.
Yes, and it's upsetting. It makes the whole thing upsetting, although she didn't look 30 at any point, but there was that, like, suspension of disbelief that, like, oh, okay, she's at least 18, but no.
I kept making comments all the way through, saying, like, I wish they hadn't hired this actress. She looks like his daughter. Like, she was so much shorter than him, too. She looked really young. So I kept thinking she looks like a teenager, which, like, I guess turned out to be, like, a, you know, truth for the movie, at least. And then she looked really short next to him, too. And I was like, she looks like his daughter. Like, I wish they had hired somebody else. And then when it turns out she's 16, I was like, oh, so that was on purpose?
To the movie's credit, there does seem to be a through line here. Like, the movie that they're working on is all based on a line from Peter Pan. And, you know, that line, I did a little research into the book, and that line in particular is Peter confiding in Wendy that he's terrified of the idea of growing up, and that this story is supposed to, what it seems like the story is supposed to be doing is showing that Jeff Goldblum needs to, like, essentially grow up, and this is his becoming infatuated with this much younger woman, and the consequences that come from that are his wake-up call to grow up, which is a, in my opinion, very generous read on what story this movie was trying to execute.
Yeah. How dare you try to give this movie any credit?
But the fact that she's 16 does seem to have something to do with that whole theme, but at the same time, it's like, okay, like there are a lot of movies that tell the story of the stunted rock star protagonist without making them a literal pedophile.
Well, I mean, I think the sad thing is, like, there was a time not too long ago in our culture where that just wasn't seen as the problem that it should have been. Like, you know, like you see American Beauty and it's like touched upon that he's obsessed with Mina Suvari and it's, you know, not great, but there's never a part where it's like, hey, you're disgusting. And like I remember we watched like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and part of why he's like in the insane asylum is he had like had sex with a 15-year-old, I think, repeatedly. And that's just like a thing about our protagonist in this movie that we're supposed to still be on his side. And it's like, no, like as soon as we found out, like in the opening, I think, scene of the movie, like, oh yeah, he has sex with his 15-year-old. I was like, nope, he's disgusting. Yep. I cannot be like, okay, I see why this movie's a classic. It's
let's
like,
see
no,
where
I,
this is going.
I want him to die. Like as soon as that happens.
Yeah, no, I hear you. It's, and it's, there also seems too to be this, he seems motivated by the idea of like saving her. He gets cross with the executive producer who sleeps with her. He gets cross with the brother who it's implied he's either sleeping with her himself or at the very least pimping her out. And he's very much like upset with them, but it's just like,
and he slut shames her super hard.
Ooh,
yes,
yeah.
He does.
Like he calls her a whore, doesn't he?
Yes. And she's like, he's like, what, you think that's what I want from you? This is what I want from you. And then he proceeds to try to have sex with her. Like, yeah, she got it right, dude. You don't have some big mystery to you. He is as like 100% as much of the problem as anyone else. He just fancies himself a little smarter than the other people she's hooking up with. And because he knows it, thinks he's better. And it's like, you're just a pedophile.
Yeah. I mean, that. Well, and there was no genuine connection. Like, I did feel bad for her character.
Yeah.
You know, at certain points, like, it, I was like, man, like, especially when he slut shames her.
Yes.
I was like, okay, like, you know, I mean, she probably doesn't have much of a choice. Like, if you're in that situation, she just seems so resigned to that fate. And I think in that way, is it Lily? I forget her name. She was in Hackers.
Walker?
I think Williams or Walker. Something with a W. But the Jenny, I think is her name in this?
Yeah.
Yes. You know, that she, the disinterested board, she had that nailed. The look. And that makes sense for the character where it's like, you know, you're just kind of resigned to being used and it's sad. I was like, oh, this is tough. It was tough to watch.
Yeah. It made me dislike him even more because of the fact that, like, it'd be one thing. I mean, it's a disgusting trope, but like the like Lolita sort of trope of like it's never a teenager the problem if an adult is attracted to them. I don't care what they're doing. But there used to be like, you know, they would like Mina Suvari and like American Beauty, they would have them be like very sexualized and like very like into trying to like act older and sexy. And she's not even like, there's nothing like sexual about her. She's like so dead inside already by being used and whatever. Or I don't know. The movie doesn't do enough to explore her character to like tell us like what's going on there. But the fact that he's so obsessed with her, I was like, I kept thinking, like, did I miss something? Like, did I look down at the wrong? Like, why is he so obsessed with her? And why is everybody in the movie so, like, sexually charged by her?
Yes. And it's like you said, that's the whole focal point of this movie is that she is everyone's twisted obsession. She is making men ruin their lives. She is I mean, it sounds horrible to say, but she is a currency to make this movie be made and all of this stuff. But 100% of the time she is on screen, she is just like vacant, disinterested in anyone who's speaking to her, that there's just, you as the audience don't get why is every, like, is this like a supernatural thing? Is she like Kilgrave or something like that? Where just like pheromones surrounding her are what's doing this. Like it just didn't make sense. And you're right. There needed to be a tiny bit of female character development could have gone a long way in this movie, but instead you know, it's, I think, Amanda, you gave a very eloquent rundown of just maybe part of the reason why she is so vacant. She is resigned to this life and stuff like that. But I also feel like that's asking the audience to do a lot of the writing work on this movie. That
I'm trying to kind of be kind. I'm trying. Yeah. I mean, it. You know, it just, you know, I hear you, Allie. Y'all brought up a good point, because there's just, and Tyler, I'm with you. I'm like, I don't see it. Like, I think if she was manipulative, or it turns out, like, you know, there's some motive behind her, or there's something that she gets from doing this type of thing. Like, you know, kind of like you're used to something with a twist, or you're used to, like, you know, again, just manipulation, or like, you know, it was jokes on you. She's the stalker or something like that. You know, like, there's some ulterior motive she has, and you get nothing from her. Like, there's no, she doesn't lead them on. She doesn't do anything. Like, there's nothing.
She just wants the movie to get made, right? That's kind of what it seemed like.
And that, well, if that.
Yeah.
I don't think that wasn't even her goal, like her own personal goal. Like, usually I think in some kind of movies like this, there is a personal motive of some sort. And yet, to me, she doesn't have any. She has no motive at all, anything for herself.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I thought we were, and because she had just absolutely nothing for the whole movie, there was that scene close to the end where he's sitting, he's like yelling at her brother and all of that, like, tell the truth. And he says, like, well, she doesn't do anything she doesn't want to do. And I, like, as a viewer who's watched, like, a lot of these movies at this point, these romantic thrillers, it's like, oh, we're going to get some kind of twist where she was secretly pulling the strings this whole time. She's been manipulating all of them. She's going to get a big paycheck. She's going to become a movie star or anything like that. And plot-wise, the whole time I'm thinking this, she's already dead because she had a weird breakdown off-screen at the executive producer's house. So you're right. Like, Amanda, you're saying, she gets nothing. Nothing for, it's, what a thankless role this is for her.
I know.
It was also weird, like, her picture was on the, like, bulletin board of, like, everybody who's working on the movie, and he's like, he sees her picture and he's so obsessed with her, and he's like, oh, she's working on the movie, and somebody's like, yeah, she is, but no one has any idea what she's doing. And it's like, I don't get how at 16 she's working on the movie, clearly getting, like, a paycheck. I don't know how fucking old her brother is that he's directing the movie. Like, I was just like, I have no concept of anyone's ages or, like, motivations or what's happening in the plot. Like,
well, he just disappears after Jeff Goldblum, like, chews him out. Like, there's nothing.
Yeah.
And what is he, like, 17? Like, I have no idea who he is, like, and how he's already an established director. And I don't know. It was just so confusing.
And I think that's the problem with everyone in this movie is I can tell you three things about all of the characters, maybe, including our star, Jeff Goldblum. Like, he's, you know, a screenwriter. He's
has a, like, son.
Yeah. I guess, like, name anything about any of these characters that is, like, an attribute that they're, like, doesn't have to do with their physical appearance or occupation.
He's a shitty dad.
There it is.
Maybe a shitty lover. Like, I couldn't quite tell.
Yeah.
I mean, judging by that, I mean, he, first of all, the, like,
I don't know though. To be fair, I guess he bangs everybody in the movie at a certain point.
He does. I feel like.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there a woman who he doesn't bang? Yes. They're the actress who he wants to, like, sweet talk. The movie takes that big detour for no real reason. There was a long stretch of this movie where I remember writing in my notes, like, I was promised a twisted obsession. I was promised a romantic thriller. I was promised a guy ruining his life over his obsession with a girl. And I will be damned if this isn't a movie about the nuts and bolts of the early stages of film development. That's all this is. It's coffee meetings where they talk about who's going to be involved in the logistics of filming. It's oh my goodness.
Well, I was thinking, like, Jeff Goldblum was going to be a villain. Like, you know, I mean, you think, like Lifetime type of, like, you know, you're just an obsession. You're like Stalker or, like, you know, like, was it True TV or Oxygen or something? You know, you get something along, or even some of the, like, the thrillers that you guys have talked about. Like, there was no, I'm like, okay, Jeff Goldblum's going to be a bad guy here. Like, okay, let's see how he does this. Like, it's going to be, and then I'm like, he gets to live his life with the agent or the, you know, and it's just like with Miranda Richardson. And I'm like, oh, okay. Like there's no, there's no repercussion. I was like, were you really obsessed with her? Cause there was no twist.
Yeah.
In the obsession. Like, again, you know, you would think like she was in danger from him. And it's like the other guy. The other guy would have said had the twisted obsession because he's the one who winds up killing her.
Yeah.
You know? So it's just
I kind of
like,
want to see their movie.
Yeah. Like, I feel like the wrong person had the twist, I guess.
Well, yeah. And so, so much of that guy's twisted obsession occurs off screen.
Yeah.
So it's like, to bring it to, I actually found, and this is not to give credit to the movie, the most interesting relationship was, like, I almost said Ian Malcolm, was Jeff Goldblum's relationship with Miranda Richardson.
Yes.
But I don't mean that in, like, oh, this was well-crafted. I mean it in that, like, it was so inconsistent from scene to scene, where it just, like, he could very easily be, like, making her a frittata as he could have been, like, having sex with her. Yeah. Or, you know, like they could have been on a seesaw at one point. Like, it just like, it was so just like whatever they felt like their relationship was going to be in the moment. It was just thrown in where it was like, at first it seemed businessy. And then at one point, like they laid on the bed together and that seemed a little like flirty. Then he like full on like made out with her kind of like, he like kissed her several times, like way too long for that to be a business kiss. And then
Hang on, real quick. I'm going to stop you there real quick, wife. What is a business kiss?
Like, you know, we're like...
Wife of mine?
You do like a mwah, mwah. Like, you know, like...
Oh,
the,
I see. Okay.
Like, the like... schmoozy like, sort of like... The
got worried
like
for a
sec. Peck on the mouth. Like, you could do a peck on the mouth, like, depending on, you know, who you are. Especially if it's a European movie, I can buy it's a business kiss. But...
I love the business kiss.
It was like way too long. And then... Then she's supposed to be obsessed with him eventually. Like, and I feel like we got to the point of where he was like, you hated her. And like, he tells that weird where he like summarizes the plot of the movie, but like brings her into it. And I had no idea she was connected to like anything.
Yeah.
Well, I think I would have enjoyed it if like ultimately like that twist would be like, she was one, like you, they could have set it up in a way where it's like, you didn't suspect her. She was trying to like help him out. Like, don't take the movie. Don't do this. And then bam, like, all three of us are in it, in your face. We took all your money.
Yeah.
You know, she could have, like, they could have made her that focal point of, like, here's the twisted, it's like, joke's on you. You think she was here. I'm the one who's obsessed with you. And it's like, or, like, if it had been something where they were doing stuff to Jeff Goldblum, you know, where Jenny was doing stuff. And he's like, why am I being stalked? Like, that scene where she shows up at his house in the kid's room. Like, I was like, okay, something's going to happen here. Like, that's weird. That's creepy. Like, why are you even in his house or apartment or whatever?
Yes.
And then, like, nothing. Like, he's okay with it. I'm like, I'd be pissed. I'd be like, why are you in my child's room? Like, you are going to die. I will hurt you. Did you hurt my child? Did you do? It's just that natural, like, who wants a stranger in the room with their kid? Like, I'm like, no.
And
like,
she's also like, oh, he's just pretending to be asleep. And Jeff Goldblum's like, okay. And then they leave the room. It's like, she just told you your son is awake and there was a stranger in the room. You don't check on him for a second.
Yes. And I'm just like, that poor kid should be like freaked out or like, and, but it's like, you could have made that scene work if like she was stalking him.
Yeah.
And then, but it wasn't really her. Joke's on, she was paid to do it. It's the agent, you know, like, I'm the one who orchestrated this whole thing, like, orchestrated you going mad or like getting stalked or something. Like, there was so much potential.
Yes. Cause they brought up at one point, like Jeff Goldblum is like, oh, like do you got, like he asked the director, like, do you have a contract? And like, oh, does your sister have a contract and all that stuff. And I thought that was planting a seed that when the generous air quotes twist happen and you find out that his agent is like friends with them, I thought it's exactly what you were saying, Amanda, that they were going to do some kind of thing where it's like, oh yeah, like I know I'm your agent, but I really screwed you on your contract. Like, all the work you've been doing on this movie, you're not going to make a dime. We are, though, like, off of your brilliant script writing mind or something like that. But instead it was just kind of a portrait of a lifestyle movie. It was just, it actually, like, I think the only reason this could be called a romantic thriller is purely for the music. There was one scene where he like goes into her bedroom because she's gone missing and they don't know where she is. So Jeff Goldblum barges into her bedroom and he looks around and he sees kind of a messy bedroom with like makeup everywhere. Like Allie, our bedroom looks like that sometimes when you're getting ready to go out. But the music is, it's like swelling like he just discovered a body, but instead it's just a kind of messy room. And I do feel like they wrote a movie about nothing and then we're like, if we have this score, we can kind of make it thriller-like.
Because there were no hints that Miranda Richardson had anything to do with the brother and sister, right?
Right.
No, he just finds a picture eventually.
Yeah, and then he just like he tells like a weird like he's like makes like a fairy tale where he's like you're the wicked old witch and blah 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 and like he was like, yeah, you find two men who like little girls, and I didn't really even, he like lays out the whole plot of the movie that's been happening off screen basically, and I was like, I was so confused that I didn't even follow the speech that he made, because I was like, I don't even, like, that's not even fair. Like, it's like, it would be like if there was a murder, like, this, like, you, there's a central murder, in it, and then the murderer turned out to be somebody that you had never met before. Like, I was just like, what are you doing? Where were we supposed to be in on any of this? Because, like, it doesn't make sense.
Well, I'm like, that would have been cool if she was like, ha-ha, we're catching pedos. Boom. Busted. Like, yeah. I mean, like, I could have taken that, too, where it's like, well, you think I'm this? Guess you're right. I did. And here's the police. Good luck.
Any twist in the end.
Anything.
Anything would have saved this movie.
Well, and it was such a large leap to make looking at the picture. Like, there was, you get no context. Like, they could have just, she could have been like, oh, yeah, I didn't remember, but, you know, maybe they were fans of hers or something, or like, they were extras on a film. Like, there was no, he just made this big old leap.
Yeah.
And that was like, wow, from one picture.
And plot wise, to my knowledge, there is simply no utility in her having known them, because it doesn't affect the story at all. It doesn't.
No.
It doesn't change any of the circumstances. It doesn't clear anything up. It's just, again, it's like one of those things. It's like the dramatic music playing where it's just like, let's add a scene where he's really upset and there's dramatic music and that'll make this vibe kind of thrillery.
And then the last like couple interactions, like there's where she like, she gets mad. Like he's like, why would you do this? And she's like, because she's 16 and I'm 30, which is a very strange justification to make. That also doesn't make sense. Why did you start doing this in the beginning? Because like, you didn't know he was gonna be into the 16-year-old. And she's like, and you're in love with her. And he was like, who are you to say who I'm in love with? And then he like grabs her to like kiss her, and then she doesn't kiss it, like she kisses him back, but she doesn't like wrap her arms around him. And he's like, you should have wrapped your arms around me. And then like, then one of the following scenes, she like has written him a letter where she's at home in London, and which I don't even know that we should know that she's in London.
She mentioned she's British at one point.
Oh no, but like it's weird because she's left to go to London to like take care of her dad or something, and it's acting like we should know that.
Yeah,
and she's like, it's nice to be around here. P.S. I should have wrapped my arms around you. And they do that weird thing where they like have her reading the letter. It's like a weird like overlay of her like in silhouette with like a weird I'm trying to think of the right like frosted lens on her.
Yeah.
And then P.S. I should have wrapped my arms around you. And then the next time we see them, she's like laying on a bed and like they've had sex ? And then she's like, can you carry me to the bathroom? I really have to pee. And I remember we were both like, wait, what? Like, is she now unable to walk? Like, why can't she?
I figured that out. I figured that out when I was doing the research, because it was like a blink and you'd miss it kind of thing. She was in a wheelchair the whole time.
Oh my God.
She was disabled the whole time.
Yeah.
He shows up at the restaurant, and then very briefly, there's like an insert shot where he looks and notices she's in a wheelchair, and then it cuts back to Jeff Goldblum. We must have been looking down, but like, I will be damned if there was any other indication that she was in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
Did you know that, Amanda?
The plot.
I think maybe one of the scenes where he wheels her away, in, that's the only scene where I was like, okay, she's actually in a wheelchair.
I thought she was in like a rolly office chair and he was being flirtatious.
It stuck out to me because I was like, that's such a weird thing to do and kind of rude. Like if somebody's like in a wheelchair, you just don't go walk up and wheel them away. Like I was like, what kind of relationship do y'all have where you can just do that? Like that's uncomfortable and weird.
Well, that makes a lot more sense.
And then I think that scene where the you didn't put your arms around me, I was like, he just left her on the floor. I was like, that is so messed up.
And that means he picked her up to like angry kiss her.
And then I'm like, she just told you she's literally creeped out that you're into. Well, I don't know if she's creeped out, but into a 16-year-old. And then you expect her to kiss you and she doesn't put her arms around you. I was like, you just picked this woman up.
She's dealing with a lot.
And you picked her up from her wheelchair. Like that's like weird. And then he just leaves her there. I was like, so messed up. Like she's on the floor. I was like, dude, like, I was like, she's in a wheelchair. Like that's so awful.
They filmed that last scene in a way where I had no idea. And like, they didn't do a great job of establishing that with her, but I was like, why does she all of a sudden want him to carry her to pee? Like, I was so confused.
Yeah.
She read his script and she's just like, will you carry me to the bathroom? I really have to pee. And you and I were both like, and by that point, it was so close to the end of the movie that we were like, this movie's fucking nonsense. Sure. One more crazy ass line. Why not? She gets to be carried to pee.
Because we kept having to rewind it to begin with because we kept thinking we were missing stuff. And so eventually we were like, we can't keep rewinding because like every time we rewound it, it didn't pay off.
Yeah, three different times during this movie, Allie and I rewound the movie and we're like, wait, I missed something. And then we rewound it to the point of where we could like remember things and we're like, no, we didn't miss a thing. This just makes no sense.
Yeah, I think I was just floored. That's why I remember so much of it because I was like, what? Like the interactions with Miranda Richardson were so weird. It was like zero. Like in the beginning, I was like, maybe there's potential of chemistry, but there's not. And it just never came through. And I'm like, I thought, oh, maybe they're going to wind up dating. Then he kind of hooks up with it, like almost like Fatal Attraction-ish type of thing where it's like, then he kind of like has this hookup with this girl and then she winds up stalking him. But then lo and behold, here's your twist. Actually, his supposed girlfriend was in on it and they're going to take all the money. I mean, I thought maybe that was going to go that direction too. Like there was a lot of directions I thought this was going to go in and not this one at all. But like they had zero chemistry. And I'm like, and again, I just thought it was so weird that he just wheels her away. And then I'm like, he just left her on the floor. And I'm like, there's so much here.
They were the two that were closest to having chemistry to me. So eventually, just because I was so bored with the movie and so starved for, like, it was billed as an erotic thriller in the description. So I was like, you two better fuck.
Yeah. That's why I was so bored. They were the closest ones to doing it. I was like, well, I thought they were going to do it with that scene where he was in the bed with her. And I was like, okay, it's going to start off their cuddling. They're kind of, you know, it's a little awkward, but at least he's in the bed with her. It's going to happen, then nothing. And then I'm like, and then you just, no, bro, like this ain't, no, y'all two ain't it. Like you were kind of hoping, you know, or something, but it just never.
I will say he's great in that scene. I thought it was kind of charming the way he was like, can I just lay next to you? I'll be good. Or maybe you don't want me to be good. I'll tell you what, you tell me if you don't want me to be good. I'm easy that way. Like that's charming. That's fun. That's classic Goldberg.
And I thought like, okay, this is it, because you said that line, like, and then nothing.
So much potential. I'll say this, what you keep reminding me of, Amanda, the movie you wanted this to be, where a guy is being stalked by a clearly deranged, dangerous woman, but he's kind of into it, is Play Misty for Me. That's definitely a movie. That's what this movie could have been.
Or Basic Instinct. I feel like Basic Instinct has that too.
I feel like in Basic Instinct, once she starts getting crazy, he's like fully no longer into it.
No, he has sex with her.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
But Oh, play Misty for me. I love that one.
Yeah,
that's a good one.
So good. It's so good. And that, but yeah, that's what I thought the potential was going to be for this. I was like, okay, here comes a twist. Or again, he was going to stalk her.
Yeah.
And then it just, you know, I was like, one of these two is going to get stalked and it's going to get weird. Or it's, or again, he hooked up with her and it's going to have like these crazy consequences. You know, I was like, oh, is maybe the agent, like, you know, Jenny goes after the agent or maybe the ex-wife or like, you know, you kind of expect something and then nothing. I was like, well, the ex-wife was like, bye. I hit it and quit it.
Yeah.
And it took the kid. Peace.
The climax of this movie is that scream. That's the our big part.
He deserved to lose his kid, first of all, because he's a bad dad and he's a pedophile. So deserved to lose. And he was not like even he shut the door. If you're like if you are performing oral sex on somebody, shut the door so your kid won't walk in. Like, that's the bare minimum of what you do to block that.
Absolutely.
He's, like, paying no attention to the child. Doesn't even seem to, like, know what the child knows or, like, likes. Because the child has, like, asked to live with his mother. I also thought he was going to be the villain because of the way that it was, like, supposed to be his twisted obsession. And I was, like, kind of excited for that, too, to see, like, oh, what does, you know, Goldblum do with this? And, like, is it going to be weirdly sexy where you're kind of, like, into the bad guy?
Yeah, I hear that because it's I was like, well, first of all, who doesn't want to be stalked by Jeff Goldblum? I'm here. You know, I'm just
saying. Yeah, you just turn around with your arms open.
Yeah, well, it's up to me. I was like, Allie, I liked your point because I was like, it kind of reminded me of that. And Tyler, I brought this one up, too, but it's that 360 days on that 365 days. And I'm like, kind of the idea of, really, the guy looking like that, and he has to like kidnap somebody. Basically, I'm like, really? We're same thing with Jeff Goldblum. I was like, somebody has to be Jeff Goldblum has to stalk someone. It should be the other way around. Like, I have zero complaints, you know. And then that happened. I was like, oh. And again, never would have thought Jeff Goldblum did. He always has chemistry in some way, shape, or form. He always has sex appeal. He's weird. Yeah. He's quirky. He's beautiful. And then this, I was like, what the hell?
There are scenes where it seems like he's fighting his natural charisma. The scene specifically where she walks in, he says, and it makes no sense, but he's like, I cast a wide net and she showed up in under an hour. It's like, I don't know what net you cast. I don't understand why she showed up to his place at all in that scene. But he sees that she's arrived and he does a very unsafe thing for a father to do, by the way. He just goes and like unlocks and makes his front door ajar. And then she walks in without knocking and he doesn't look up and acknowledge her until she's in his living room and says words to him. It makes no sense. It's so weird. And it's like, that's a moment where it's like Jeff Goldblum is aware that this woman that he likes is coming over to his place and she's kind of like steamy for him. Unleash Goldblum. But instead, it's just he has to just sit there and not acknowledge her until she speaks.
I do think also like the better, like Amanda has also like laid out better movies.
Yes.
And like the other better movie is like to have it be he's punished for being a pedophile. So he's gotten into this weird trap that was set by the agent and like the brother and the sister were somehow in on it. It's a weird like David Fincher-esque thing.
Yes.
And it's just none of that. It's just the whole time, like every single time I feel like a scene ended, I just would go, what?
Yeah. They could have had him like, you know, like, okay, he's done all of this stuff. He's infatuated. He's with a 16-year-old. He's professionally tied up with like his relationship with this 16-year-old. He could lose his son. He could lose his job. None of that happens. Everyone is just super psyched to have him here.
And it seems like he writes a script about it at the end and then like, and that the agent has read it and she thinks it's wonderful and it's so great that she's moved to pee. And like,
Oh, it should be like a new rating of some sort.
I know, moved to pee.
So much to move to pee.
But she seemed very moved by it and that, you know, like, it seems like this all happened and then he fought her for his screenplay. So, like, this poor 16-year-old girl who was being, like, objectified and, like, sexualized by everybody and used up, she just becomes, like, fodder for his, like, shitty screenplay that he writes next. And, like, that's all the movie ends up being is him, like, writing a screenplay at the end and then, like, I think fucking his manager.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's fine with it. Guys, there's a car chase in this movie. And it makes ish. No sense. It's you know what it is? It's another example of this movie just being like, let's just throw in a thriller element. Does it have to make sense? Do we have to write it in? No, just sort of jam it in there. And yeah, he goes to see her. Yes. He finds her on set, like kind of being exploited by her brother. And she's like, he goes to talk to her, and this character, rather than have a scene where she reveals anything about herself or anything like that, gets on her motorcycle and goes, catch me if you can, and then fucks off. And Jeff Goldblum...
That's the most flirtatious thing she does the whole movie.
Yes, but like Jeff Goldblum knows where she lives. They are professionally entangled. She comes over to his house randomly sometimes. She hides in his son's room. Yet he gives chase like he will never see this woman again if he does not catch her in his car right here, right now, to the point where he ends up in the hospital.
See, this could have worked if he like saw her on the street before he even talked to the brother. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
if before he meets with the brother, or like they after even they have the meeting, but he's not been to the brother's place yet. Like if he walks out of that meeting and he sees like her on this like this mysterious woman on the motorcycle, and then you're intrigued, and then you like follow chase or something.
Yeah,
like you could have made that work, but then
or if he needs to, I don't know, he needs to like beat her somewhere, or if she's like if she's avoiding him or something like that. But this is just supposed to be like flirty little fun times, and
it also appeared that he like lost the car chase, like got into the accident just because he was bad at driving. Like it didn't feel I didn't feel like she like eluded him, and then when he crashed it almost reminded me of like Back to the Future when like Biff crashes like into like the manure truck. Like it was just like it was such a goofy like crash where like things like fell. Like I was like, this is, it just felt so like slapsticky that I didn't get where it fit into the movie.
And then he ends up in the hospital where the nurse is kind of into him. The age appropriate nurse is kind of into him.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And, well, she's the one that goes with him to find the bodies.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. Like if they had done that earlier and maybe like she realized something was up, or like, you know, like, she could have been like a lifesaver, like, wow, he's obsessed like with this girl, like there's something's wrong here, or like there's no registering that I was like, aren't you weirded out that he just wants to find this body? Like
he asks her so like out of the blue too, like they say hi to each other, she's like, oh, remember me, I'm the nurse that fed you, and he was like, he's like, oh hey, so if a body was unclaimed and no one knew who it was, where would it go? And she's like, okay.
Like, she's like, that's a weird question. He goes, oh, it's for a screenplay I'm writing. And she's like, oh, in that case, let's go to the weird underground like dead body party that I know how to get us into because I'm a nurse. My mom's a nurse. I should ask her, hey, do you know how to get into like weird dead body parties? The other thing about it too, I would love to see the movie or the part of the movie where he goes with her to this clearly kind of underground nefarious thing. And then he like does his yell, his scream. And then I want to see where they like cut to her and all the guys being like, hey, that dude you brought, not cool. He can't hang, really.
I'm like, I want to know how she even knew how to get there.
Yeah, me too. Like,
I'm like, that's the sneaky.
What's her movie?
I agree. There are so many more interesting characters surrounding all of our characters in this movie. Well,
I'm like, I want to know more about these weird parties. Not that it's like anything I would ever I don't want to go, but I'm like, this is a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And who the fuck like, you're going to the dead body party to make out?
Yeah. So I'm like, what is happening here? Like, what is the story here?
They're also to be fair, making out with each other, like live people. It's not like it's necrophiliacs.
Right.
So I don't quite get what they're into.
Yeah.
It's like a date spot. It's like we could see a movie, grab drinks, or actually, I know about this weird dead body party. Would you maybe be into that? No? How about a drunk paint night? No? You want to do that instead?
It's like the kids from Stand By Me, but they grew up.
Oh, Allie, you got to get sick more often. You're on fire tonight. Okay. Well, look, we're noodling around this movie. I am curious at this point to know what everyone's, I mean, of a movie that just seems like an assortment of random scenes. It feels like someone knocked over a glass and this movie spilled out. What was everyone's absolute favorite, like, scene from this movie? Amanda, the face you just gave me makes me think you're not ready. So I'm going to go first. Yeah. The look of shock of, like, favorite in this?
Yeah.
I have one, but it's because of another great line from my wife when we were watching. Do you remember they were midway through, like, production on this movie? Goldblum kind of wants to get out of the movie, and he meets with the executive producer, his, like, boss guy, and he's got a draft of the script. And he's trying to get him to, like, pay for it. And he's like, you know, I don't know how you can make this. Like, you can't make a movie like this. And Jeff Goldblum's like, oh, well, just get a star. And he's like, this is nonsense. It's a dream that a monkey's having. It's like an art film. It doesn't make sense. There's no room for a star in this crap. And there was a pause. And then Ali just goes, yeah. Like, that's this movie. That's Twisted Obsession. You've got Jeff Goldblum in a role in a movie that he has no business being in because it's nonsense. It's slapped together like the dream a monkey would have. It was such, like, a weird meta commentary moment, and it really made me laugh when you were just like, yeah, that's Twisted Obsession. 100%. Ali, how about you? What was your favorite moment from this movie? Most
my
absurd,
favorite.
Sexiest, whatever you want to call it.
Once I committed to, because, like, I was thinking it was going to be him and Miranda Richardson on the bed because it was, like, getting charming, but no, the movie would not give us that. So the yell was actually my favorite. Like, it was the fact that, A, it was just, like, I will say it was unexpected to me, because it goes there knowing that likely Jenny's body is there because he knows that she's dead because he found that out from the executive producer. He knows that her body was unclaimed and, like, kind of left on the side of the road. So he knows that he's going to see her body more likely than not. When her body finally comes up, you would think he was going to be crying, you know, devastated, but to have the reaction be, no, like, was so... Actually, I don't even think he says no.
He just screams.
Ah! That was so unexpected for me and the fact that it did go on for so long and that it was, like, intercut with, like, silence really just, what a stupid way to cap off your movie.
I'm going to piggyback off you because that was my favorite part. Like, I died laughing. Like, straight up. Like the first, like, and his facial just cracked me up. I was like, I can't even. And I laughed so hard. I think it was like 2 a.m. when I was like watching this too. And I'm like, oh my God, I just can't. And then it kept going. And I think I laughed so hard till I cried because it just kept going. And I was just like, there was no change. No, like, he wasn't, like, falling to his knees, like, he wasn't grief stricken or like any, like, it was just like, and it almost reminded me of that. What's the most annoying sound in the world? that's kind of where I went with that.
It was Rally. Like they just used the same take, too. Like, it wasn't, like, continued. Like, it was so weird.
Well, it's like that running scene, like, where somebody's running and you're watching them with a sword and they loop that over and over and they never get closer. That's kind of what this reminded me of, editing-wise, where it's like, and it's the same.
It's also his sound. Like, he sounds so surprised. And I'm like, dude, you went there looking for her body. Like, what did you expect?
Yeah, like, I'm like, you know she's dead.
Yeah.
And it's just, it cracked me up. I was probably like I've never seen Jeff Goldblum do anything that, like, he's always brings himself to a film. And it is funny. It is quirky. Even when he's dramatic, like, there's always something Goldblum-esque. This was so un-Goldblum that it was funny to me. Yeah. And that's why that part sticks out to me so much, because I just remember sitting there going, like, what the? I was like, wait, what? And then I just started laughing because it was just so ridiculous.
Yeah, it just did not feel like it belonged in any movie. Like,
and then not to nitpick, but this movie does do a lot of, like, weird scenes and then hard cut to something even weirder. After the scream, it does like a cut and he's in the rain. And, like, we've all seen that scene before where someone needs to calm down or whatever, and they're just, like, looking up, letting the rain wash over them.
Yes.
Except this specifically, he's not letting the rain wash over him. He's letting rain that's, like, dripping off of a bridge wash over him. And it's, I remember watching it and being like, just have him step two paces to the right. And this is so much less gross. But yeah. No, he's just letting the bridge spill off, just hit him in the face. It made no sense. Another weird choice from an impossibly weird movie.
There's no words for how, really, no. I think the best summary of this movie is Jeff Goldblum's scream.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's all you need to know.
It's almost like, I feel like you could make a really dynamite trailer for The Fly where you cut that scream in somehow. Someone smarter than me should do that. Fuck Be Afraid, Be Very Afraid. Just add that scream in and you've got a better The Fly trailer.
Yeah, it's so uncommitted.
Yes.
Like it's like, it is just like somebody was like, hey, scream. Ah.
Yes.
Hey, Jeff, exactly, we want to check your levels.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. And you know what? We've actually lost the day, so we're just going to wrap and use that in the movie. Okay, well, now it's time for what is usually my favorite segment of the podcast, where I get to read a little trivia about these movies. And it's still my favorite, but I will say this. We have done some obscure movies. We did, what was that Lifetime movie we did recently?
Lying Eyes.
And I was like, oh, okay, there's nothing about it here. This actually beat it. There is nothing about this movie online. When you search for it, like, you have to do like Twisted Obsession movie, Twisted Obsession, yeah, Jeff Goldblum, and you still get absolutely
nothing. Did you look up Mad Monkey?
Yes, several times. I looked up everything. I looked up the Spanish language, or is it French? I can't remember.
El sueño de... Del Mono Loco.
That's the movie, but I mean the book, I think, has a Spanish or a French title.
French.
But yeah, still, you get nothing. Even the Wikipedia page, and this is true, I went to the Wikipedia page for the book, and they summarize what the book is about, and then they cite their sources. And I went and I looked at the source, and it was a review for the movie. So even the Wikipedia page for the book fucks up and like cites this movie. It's wild. But I did manage to get just a couple of things, starting with a review from Kevin Thomas of the Los Angeles Times from 1990, the year after this movie came out. Allie, do you remember the first thing you said when the sister came on screen?
She looks 12, or she, yes, looks blank.
She looks 12. And this reviewer, the first time he mentions her, says, quote, and when Goldblum meets Walker, who plays a girl of 16 who looks closer to 12, he's transfixed. And I thought, that really made me laugh. And I looked, and a lot of other people, like, who made reviews, indeed mentioned 12 years old specifically. That she looks...
Yeah.
Others just said she looks younger than 12, like, things like that. But others were like, yeah, 12. That's a 12-year-old. I thought that was funny. I went and I watched the director accept his Spanish Oscar for Best Director. But either it's a short clip or they don't give them a lot of time to make speeches. But all that he said, and this is from a translation from Google, but the entirety of his speech that's on YouTube is, quote, "Thank you so much for the embarrassment you're putting me through tonight. Thank you." End quote. I don't speak Spanish, but he seemed to be saying it in a way of like, oh, all this attention, you flatter me, but just thank you for this embarrassment.
Was I right that, is it called the Goya?
Yes, it is. The Goya Awards, or is it Goya? I don't know, but yes, the Goya is in there. It won, as we mentioned, 6 Goya Awards, including Best Film, Best Director, Best Screenplay, Best Cinematography, and Best Editing. So, the person who did the
oh my gosh,
won one of the highest awards in their country's filmmaking business for
also the
that.
Abrupt cuts between scenes.
Yes. Yeah, Jeff Goldblum locking eyes with his kid while he's going down on a woman and then being in bed with the kid. The creme de la creme of 1989, yeah, in that year. Yeah. Crazy.
It did feel like somebody making a joke, like foreign film, you know, like when you're watching a movie and they make like a jokey foreign film or a jokey student film. It felt like somebody was making a jokey student foreign film.
Yes. Yeah. And then, I mean, really, the last bit of trivia I have here, and we've mentioned it a few times. We mentioned that it was shot in Paris and Madrid. So I'd like to think that Goldblum was like, I'll sign on. That's a kind of free vacation. Let's do that. But the last real bit of trivia I have here is that Twisted Obsession, the movie made in 1989, consists of an adaptation of a 1976 novel, The Dream of the Mad Monkey, which is also the title of the script that they're writing. Or, and I believe this is a French title, Le Rêve du Cygne Fou, which I'm hoping translates to The Dream of the Mad Monkey, written by Christopher Frank. Christopher Frank, who by profession is a screenwriter, novelist, filmmaker, director, which I think makes the Jeff Goldblum character somewhat autobiographical.
Ew, I hope not.
Exactly.
Oh.
If you meet Christopher Frank in a dark alley with your 16-year-old daughter, you turn and run.
I saw that this movie was also called in certain markets, like just called Mad Monkey. And like, I will say, it would be even more confusing than having it be called Twisted Obsession to watch it if it's called Mad Monkey. Like, I would be so much more confused.
Mad Monkey sounds like Minions or Despicable Me or Kung Fu Panda. Like, that's fun. Bring the kids.
Or I don't know, like an angry monkey.
Yeah.
Or like Outbreak. Get a monkey with the infectious disease and Mad Monkey.
Or what's that? What's that horror movie? Monkey Shines, like something like. But Mad Monkey. Had I watched it with the title, I almost wish I had watched it with the title Mad Monkey, to see how confused I would have been. Like the extra layer of confusion on top.
See, and if it worked with Mad Monkey, you could have had that whole thing be weird and bizarre, and then at the end, it's someone's dream, or it's like they have like a cut, and then it's like here's the script. And it was just like you watching the movie being made or something like that. Like here, this is what you just saw was the actual film that we wrote, Mad Monkey.
Well, oh my God. I'd love it if there was just like the movie ended with a confessional from Christopher Frank where he was just like, yeah, this happened. We were really high and we got to talking and I hooked up with this guy's sister. Anyway, thanks for watching.
But it's like, I do picture like just like a really obnoxious French guy being like, you know, it's the dream of the mad. You're like, what does this mean? Like the dream of the mad monkey, you know, it's like a dream of the mad monkey. Like, I'm like, I don't get why you titled your book that. Like, it's not clever. It's not like poetic. It's not like metaphorical in a way that makes any sense to me.
Yeah, I'm like, where was the monkey in all of this? I'm so confused.
Yeah.
Is it supposed to be like the metaphorical monkey off the back?
Yeah. I was like, the metaphor makes no sense.
The story's like a Peter Pan thing about growing up, so the mad monkey dreaming has nothing to do with that, unless
there's
really
no
misunderstood Peter Pan.
There's no monkey in Peter Pan. I've read like the original book. I've seen like the musical. I've seen the Disney movie. There's no monkey in it.
If you are listening to this and you worked on this movie or you know anyone who did, please get in touch. I would like to shake you and ask, what were you thinking? There's so much that just doesn't make sense.
I'm like, I just want to know how it even came to be. Like, what was that whole, there's so much I just don't understand. Like what, and then what wound up on the cutting room floor for them to edit it badly? Like, I'm like, do you think the stories on this set would be interesting?
If you get to meet Jeff Goldblum again, you need to be like, oh, I love you.
Right.
I loved you in Twisted Obsession, and see how he reacts.
Oh no, maybe I'll have my best friend do it. I'm too.
Do you know how many Jurassic Park questions he's answered that day? You will be the first person to be like, Twisted
That's
Obsession,
legit.
I want to hear all about it. And he will remember you for the rest of his life.
It's true. I'm going to be like, we did a podcast on Twisted Obsession, and we just want to know what was that like.
We've kicked off a series of events that either leads to Jeff Goldblum hating us or guesting on Nut Couple Goals.
I mean, I let's aim for the positive here.
Absolutely.
Let's go for it.
He might be really touched that somebody actually, because he probably thinks this movie's been lost to time, because it looks like it's been lost to time.
Yeah, there will come a time. This may, like, search engine wise, this may be our most successful podcast, because we are. I have a feeling if you search Twisted Obsession, Jeff Goldblum in the next couple days, like, we're going to be it. It's going to be the IMDb
pretty much.
And us.
Pretty much. And maybe he will. Maybe he'll be like, oh my gosh, you guys love me so much that y'all dug this up. Okay.
He has a Google alert for Twisted Obsession news.
So that he can sick his agents on it and get them to not, to like, shut it down. His agent being Miranda Richards.
Right.
Oh, my goodness. Well, guys, this was, I mean, I thought we were going to struggle to get through this episode, honestly. But Amanda, you were absolutely right. The more cuckoo bananas the movie, the more fun it is to talk about. And that's something we learned time and again on this podcast. I love when we get to do Saltburn. I love when we get to do Poor Things. But like, man, a good Out of the Blue, a good Twisted Obsession. I have so much fun, and we always have fun with you.
Wasn't it Into the Blue? I hated that movie.
I think Paul Walker one is Into the Blue. I think Out of the Blue was.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was out. I thought the Paul Walker one was Out of the Blue
with Jack Nicholson's son.
I want to say Into the Blue is Paul Walker.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that good? Should we do that?
I saw it the woods.
That is the diplomacy we can expect from Amanda Rivas. That was great. Amanda, thank you so much. But before we fully wrap you, last segment of the podcast, would you recommend someone watch this movie?
Oh my God, no. Well, if you're a hardcore Jeff Goldblum fan, I feel like if you really, really love him and like are curious about his other stuff, it's one of those that it's like, well, if I'm saying I've watched every Jeff Goldblum movie and have to prove it, here you are. But no, would I recommend it to anybody else? I mean, even my fellow Jeff Goldblum fans, you have to really love him, you guys. Yeah. Like, love him. And watch, be willing to accept that it's not pretty what you're going to see.
Watch every other Jeff Goldblum movie first. And then, just to be a completionist, watch this.
Yeah.
This might make you love him less.
Exactly. I'm like, if you're a completionist, you have to be a really dedicated completionist, but no, otherwise I would not recommend it to anyone. No, let it be on Freebie, and it's like there's a reason why it's all the way it is.
Yeah.
That you can't find anything online about it, like, other than, even if Wikipedia can't, there's a reason.
it watches like somebody tried to destroy the film.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. Maybe we'll find that out.
Yes, I agree. It's hard to watch as a movie because it's nonsense. It's slow. It's boring. The music is melodramatic and weird. But it's also hard to watch just physically because, the port or whatever they have is not good. So, yeah, I really can't say I would recommend this movie to anyone. This is for no one. Even, like, you, the most hardcore Jeff Goldblum fan I know, when I asked the question, was like, no, just no.
Yeah, I do not see myself ever watching this ever again.
Yeah.
Like, no, not at all.
Allie, my love, who managed to make it all the way to the end of the podcast, no, regardless of her voice, would you recommend this movie?
No.
And there you have it, folks.
I also... You know who I want to watch this movie? Jeff Goldblum. He deserves to watch this movie after making me watch this movie.
Oh my God. Right? A Jeff Goldblum like 2024 commentary track on Twisted Obsession would be fucking amazing.
Oh man, Jeff Goldblum, please. I will ask next Comic-Con or next thing I see and be like, can you please join my friends? Go to Not Couples and... do like, we'll watch it live with you.
Oh yeah.
I'll crash that episode too. We'll watch it live with you. And I just want to hear it. I just want to hear like his raw, cause you know, he's going to have so much to say about it.
Yes.
And I just want to hear it like live and in action. And I will be ready with like tissues. Cause I'm going to cry. Cause it's going to be hilarious. I want to hear him narrate the yell.
Yeah.
Recreate it. If he recreated it, I would just, I've hit my life's. That's my high point.
I will bankrupt myself giving you every ounce of money I have to please do this, Jeff Goldblum.
I want to get the director. I want to make him sit down and watch it and be like, explain yourself.
That's a different commentary track. That's just Allie lecturing
him. That's vengeance. Yeah. That's my Twisted Obsession.
How dare you, sir? Oh my God. Guys, this was a fun one. Yet again, Amanda, you come on our podcast and you absolutely kill it. Bring us to a whole other level. Thank you so much for coming and filling in as the guest host, not being mad that I threw the recap to you. You're really the best. We love having you on so much. Thank you so much. Please tell everyone what you're working on, where they can find you, everything.
Well, thank you guys again for having me. You guys seriously are one of my favorite podcasts to listen to. Every time, like, I have y'all on alert, every time y'all drop a new episode, I'm like, yes! And, yeah, that's me at work. I'm like, don't bother me. Do not come in here. I need to listen. So, for everybody out there, please, 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 like, subscribe, do all the things, because these two are fantastic. They're fantastic human beings. I love them to death. One day, Brandon and I will come visit. It's going to be amazing when we all get together. And Brandon's not like a super huge people person. Like he's good at it. He can people, but when he likes people, it's very like, and he like loves you guys.
Oh,
so
we love him too.
Yeah. Yeah. He was actually super, he was like, oh, you're going to, I was like, I don't know if you want to watch this movie. I almost made him watch it, but I'm like, I'm glad I saw it first.
Just show him the yell.
Prove him right. I actually will. I think that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to find the yell and just,
and secretly film him watching it.
Yes. I'll be like, check this out. But yes. So again, thank you guys for having me. It is always a blast. And obviously it was like the minute you messaged Tyler, I was like, yes, it's you guys. Like, duh. Anytime you message me, I will jump on anytime.
We love you.
Yeah. Love you guys too. Right back at y'all. So, of course you can find me at Amandalorian on Instagram. I just share all my random nerd adventures. It's like pop culture, Star Wars, anime, pictures of my family, all that kind of stuff. And Brandon's wrestling stuff, because I support him, support the Hybrid School of Wrestling. They are all wonderful. They have a show Saturday. It's going to be great. He was already telling me stuff he's going to do. And I'm here like, I'm going to hold my breath here. It's like, please remember, we still have plans the next day. We're here. We have a con the same weekend. We both cosplay as well. So we actually have one of our first anime cons we are super excited about this year. It is Riverwalk Anime, and they are stacked with some of our favorite voice actors. So we will be doing a My Hero Academia cosplay and a group cosplay and, of course, a fairy tale cosplay as well. So that is, if you're interested to see how that turns out, we are at Brandalorian on Instagram as well. And I am at Resner's Chick on Threads, and I'm throwing one for him. He's at Havoc1775. On X, and Brandon Vice Wrestling on all their socials. Of course, I am the co-host with Bill Botkin and Al Manarino on The Socially Distanced. That drops every Friday. Tyler will be joining us, and I'm not going to drop what we're going to watch, but he's got a track record.
I will explain myself tomorrow. Yes. Thank you very much.
Yes, yes. And so, obviously, we love having him. Allie, we love having you. The Thirst Queen. I love it.
The First Lady of Thirst.
The First Lady of Thirst. That is
right. I love that.
That's why Bill does the intros and is so great. The First Lady of Thirst. And so check out our back catalog to obviously, you know, hear Tyler and Allie, who've joined us before, and we love having you guys. But every Friday, Socially Distanced, and it's going to be on the Pop Break feed now, since we're doing the unified feed as of April 28th. Well, actually, we still have our own separate. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think Socially Distanced might be different.
Own. So it should be still on its own separate, as far as I know. But you can find us there. I'm also the co-host with Josh Sarnecki of Anime Pop. Clearly, y'all know I love anime. That's all I've talked. Usually, all I talk to people about is Star Wars or anime. And, you know, we cover different animes as they're happening, some of the hot and happening ones. Like we talked about Solo Leveling earlier this year. You know, we are actually getting ready, and we've talked some of the big ones, Attack on Titan, One Piece. We talked about the live action Avatar. So do check out our back catalog. But this month we will be talking about Kaiju number 8, which is highly, highly anticipated. I've seen tons of ads for it. And then Go Go Loser Ranger as well. And actually, Brandon will be our guest this month.
All right.
So check us out. And we are on the pop. We will now be on the new Pop Break feed as well as of April 28th. But you can still catch us, you know, every month up until then. So we all merge together in this cool, unified kind of streaming network of awesome. So
that's right.
And of course, you know, follow the Pop Break. I'm going to pull Bill here. Follow the Pop Break on all socials. I think it's Pop Break on everything except for YouTube, which is a Pop Break TV. And I think I covered everything. Hopefully I did him. I made him proud. And so again, thank you guys so much for having me. Anytime y'all want me back, I'm here.
Oh, thank you. We appreciate that. And great job guest hosting and just being our record breaking guest.
Yay. That's right.
Allie, where can the people find you?
You can find me on Threads and Instagram, where I post a lot of thirst traps and fun little comedy videos, at Anelretentive, A-N-E-L-R-E-T-E-N-T-I-V-E. You can find my comedy videos and, you know, fun little videos that I post on YouTube and TikTok at Like Willie Nelson, spelled just like you would think it would be, Like Willie Nelson. And you can find my writing on parade.com. And I recently debuted my first article on the Today Show's shop site, where I am in a blue bathing suit. So you can see me in a blue bathing suit.
That's right.
She's a hottie. I'm going to tell you guys, she's a hottie. Yes. Just saying. Just saying.
I was going to say the same thing. Now I look like a copycat.
But do you have to do it better than me now?
Yes. My absolute smoke show dime piece of a wife is, yes, available on the Today Show, the Today Show's shop section. It's actually a really good article.
You can't buy me, though. I'm not available.
No, but the swimsuit is. Not the one she's wearing, pervs.
Unless it's for the right.
We'll talk. You email Not Couple Goals and we'll talk. All right, guys. And you can find me on Threads at TylerMcCarthy328. And you can find me on X at Tyler McCarthy, where really I'm just reposting episodes of this podcast. And again, I just want to reiterate, starting April 28th, if you want to listen to future episodes of Not Couple Goals, all you have to do is go subscribe to The Pop Break. The podcast is going to be The Pop Break. And it's not just going to be us. It's going to be a ton of other really cool people doing really cool podcasts, including Amanda here. So please go check that out. A lot of cool people are working hard. And guys, that's been our show. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Special thanks to Mallory Johns for our intro and outro music.
And Alex Marcus, our producer.